You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Tuesday, 6 October. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, we chat with Nessa Nayo on markets as French Channel Plus takes a 6.5% stake in MultiChoice. Keith McLachlan has ideas to boost the JSE, and Claudia Smith on saying no thanks to the new normal. Some morning headlines from MoneyWeb: value funds worldwide have underperformed, but John Bickard at 91 holds fast. From CNBC, Goldman Sachs says Asia is best positioned for economic recovery. Morning markets, US very green as President Trump returns to the White House. S&P up 1.8%, NASDAQ up 2.3%. Asia green, Sydney up just 0.1%, and Tokyo slightly better, up 0.4%. Commodities also green, gold also green, $1,917 an ounce. The rand at 16.52 against the US dollar. And top 40 opening call looking for a green open, up around 0.3%.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Nissen Naya, portfolio manager, Sasfin Securities. Nissen, morning. Appreciate your time. In we're kind of out of results season for now, but the big move in our market yesterday was MultiChoice. News that French media company Canal Plus taking a 6.3% stake in MultiChoice. Market full of ideas, maybe takeovers, maybe joint ventures up in sort of Northern Africa. Your take on it, or are we all just getting far too excited about something that perhaps is not actually that big a deal?
Yeah, good morning, Simon. I think the speculation is very warranted here, because I can't see why they would take a 6.5% stake without having the intention of increasing it down the line, perhaps even making an offer. And we've seen this sort of thing happen before globally, but it was the other way around. You remember AT&T bought out Time Warner's assets. So it was an infrastructure provider really buying out a content provider. Now we've got a content provider looking to buy out essentially an infrastructure provider that has got that supplies content through the whole of the continent, and really has got quite a good footprint, probably the best footprint, to reach as many households throughout the African continent. So of course, entertainment is big business now, whether you're talking online gaming or like companies like Tencent, for example, or video on demand, companies like Netflix and Disney Plus. People are wanting to get their hands on subscribers to entrench themselves, in this business for the years to come. And I think one way of doing that is to buy out businesses that have those subscribers. So I'm on the camp that feels that this is actually just the start of perhaps a strategy, to buy out MultiChoice.
Yeah, and there was some interesting comment in the sense where MultiChoice says, we regularly engage with strategic partners, but we have no comment about what those engagements are. In other words, there's been talks, but they're not going to tell us what those talks are. And fair off, they don't need to, but I take your point. Something happening here. Something definitely happening. Sasol, obviously that news broke last week around the sale of part of their Lake Charles chemical plant. The market didn't like it. And I mean, is it fair to say that the market is still truthfully looking forward to next year, when Sasol is coming almost certainly with the rights issue, and the question is not is there a rights issue, the question is going to be how big is that rights issue going to be, and market remains nervous.
Yeah, I think if you go with what sort of rights issues we've seen recently, the one that comes to mind is the Hammerson one for me. I mean, there's going to be some big discounts if certainly the oil price remains where it is right now, and it's a settled share price, not going to do too much. They're going to need, certainly for profitability, it's not going to mean much for them. So what they're going to need is some other way of trying to pay down that debt instead of paying it out of profits. And I think the rights issue is down the line. I also thought the deal was strange. You know, they've got, I think, seven units in Lake Charles, mm-hmm. in that big project there. I think they sold three, mm-hmm. 50% interest in three of them at $2 billion. Remember, the whole thing cost them about $13 billion. So, of course, it depends on what the contribution of each one is to the profits and things. But ultimately, I'm not sure how that works. You know, how do you sell part of a plant still keep the balance? You know, how does that work, actually? But anyway, there are, I think, from my perspective, they are addressing the concern of investors. It was a very big project. It didn't really work out for them. Those chemical prices aren't where they should be. And they did indicate that they were looking to partner, which they've done. They've delivered that. They did indicate that they were going to sell some assets. They sold that oxygen plant. They told us about the rights issue. Big question mark as to what sort of discount they have there. But I think strategically, their intention was to pay down the debt, and they are meeting that strategic objective. So that may be a positive to take from it. You know, whether they're going to sell, all the crown jewels, though, to pay down the debt, I think that is a concern investors have. And I suppose that's why the share price is not reacting positively.
Yeah, fair sure. Quick last question. No news on this one. Mondi having a storming a couple of days recently. It's actually trading at well above the highs for the year, which is not a normal circumstances in a year of a pandemic. Is there something here? Is this a stock that you keep an eye on, that you have in portfolios?
Yes, it is. In fact, it was a stock pick I did yesterday. And it's a great observation from your side, Simon, because remember, this has been strengthening in light of a stronger rand. Now, yeah. Remember, I mean, this is effectively a commodity company, right? Paper prices. So, you know, I'm just wondering whether or not people are finally coming to the understanding that, the packaging business is really, integrated with online retail. And maybe that's the reason why people are looking at it and saying, well, this might be, one of the survivors going into the next sort of generation of online. So it didn't have a great few years, if you think about it. It's taken a long time to get to where it is right now. But there certainly seems to be a little strong momentum behind the share.
Yeah, there certainly is some momentum there. And I like your idea around the packaging, the online. Maybe there is something there. Nessa Nair, Portfolio Manager, Sasfin Securities. Appreciate your time.
MoneyWeb Now. On the Money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Keith McLachlan. You find him at Alpha Asset Management. Although today we're talking about something he put on his personal blog, smallcaps.co.za. Keith, morning. In essence, you're looking to try and save the JSE. And I suppose the question then is, to kick off, is why does the JSE need saving? And their problem, and it's a global issue, is listings are decreasing. The problem with the JSE is that when you are a small exchange, as those listings decrease, eventually you get to the point where, the question almost becomes, is it viable? So they really do have a challenge here.
Morning, Simon. Yes, so globally there's absolutely a trend where there are a shrinking number of individual listings around exchanges around the world. In South Africa, though, that's particularly pronounced, and our market is just progressively getting more and more concentrated. Now, like I said, it's a bit of a global problem where you have the costs of being listed are so high. You know, private sector, private capital markets have become so developed. And in South Africa, obviously, you've got sovereign risk all adding to this. But the reality is that this is not addressed. And there are things that are out of the JSE's control, and we absolutely acknowledge that. Mm-hmm. But there are things the JSE can control to make it more attractive. Now, the real trick is you've got to get the small listings, because the small listings become the big listings later. So in the absence of that, and what we currently have now is the complete opposite. We have small listings delisting. We need to get them listing, because in the absence of that, 5, 10, 20 years' time, you have an incredibly concentrated market. And what if unbelievably NASDAQ's or process either goes bang or delists? What if Virgin America just gets tired of complying with the JSE rules and moves entirely offshore? I mean, what do you start to have left then?
Yeah, and you've got 8 ideas to sort of get things back on track. We're not going to touch on all of them, time constraints. The one that, you know, to jump out at me, the first is JDRs. So we've got ADRs, which are American Depository Receipts. In essence, what you're suggesting is a third party, one of the corporate banks, could basically list those top U.S. stocks. I mean, get those FANGs, the Facebooks, the Apples, and the like, and list a depository receipt on the JSE. It doesn't solve directly the issue of you know, new companies coming, but it'll pick up liquidity for them and opportunity for investors.
So one of the key problems from our market, and I touched on that sovereign risk, is a lot of capital flows out of South Africa. And typically, the moment it gets sold, stocks get sold and money gets pulled off the JSE mm-hmm. and sent offshore into the NASDAQ or something like that, it never, ever comes back here. So it's never going to buy another South African company. So you've got to approach this as an ecosystem, and your objective is try to retain as much capital here as possible. Now, typically, the money that flows offshore is doing so to buy more attractive assets, the Amazons, the Googles, Facebooks, and the like. Well, why don't you just list them here? And using the ADR structure and just converting it to a South African structure, JDR, mm-hmm. Can take those listings and list them here, in which case there is a disincentive to sell out of the JSE, pull the money, incur brokerage costs, triggering all sorts of costs and complications, then one can actually just click a button and buy it over here.
Yeah.
So that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to retain the capital in the ecosystem, and at some point, maybe, our small cap market or some other South African company is more attractive than, for example, the Amazons of the world. So the person sold the JDR and buys that. Now, if the money's gone offshore, that's never going to happen. And that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to retain a deep liquid pool of capital. Yeah.
That's a great point. Money offshore doesn't come back. The other one I really liked, a pooled small cap sell side research fund. In other words, get the JSE to put some money into a pot and essentially employ some analysts and let's get some research. There are some great small cap stocks out there, but particularly for many of the private clients, which we just don't know about them.
Yes, so 10 million rand a year, which by the way is just fractionally over 1% of the net profit of the JSE in 2019, and they paid bonuses to board members, restraint of trade payments, and annual leave provision that were larger than this. So this is not a small amount of money, or not a big amount of mm-hmm. money to the JSE, apologies. But 10 million rand a year, 30,000 rand per month, can support 28 analysts. Now, if those analysts sit in the sell side position and write a research at a rate of one report per month, which is not a lot, you can write far mm-hmm. more than that. But one report per month, you're getting over 300 reports on the small and mid-cap market. Now, that's huge because that's the size of the small and mid-cap market. In fact, it's a little bit bigger. Now, the whole point is that the small caps list and that ultimately there's a risk they get orphaned because the economics of the sell side industry dictate that it's more profitable to cover the large caps. What you're trying to do is you're trying to create an incentive to offset the costs, make the coverage of the small cap market more attractive, and you get certain bonuses out of this. The first bonus is obviously you get a range of new generation analysts that hopefully stay in the industry and generate value over many, many years. And in fact, one can even make that a affirmative position, so you get some transformation mm-hmm. going. The second thing is you make it more attractive to list as a small business on the JSE. Now, a small business can stay private. They can list elsewhere. But the moment they think of listing, if they list elsewhere, they're going to get lost in the shuffle. Whereas on JSE, having this mechanism in place, you potentially can make that decision much, much easier. And then all of that ultimately adds liquidity, adds interest, and you get the general public looking at this part of the market with far more interest.
And it
creates this positive feedback loop that you're trying to stimulate.
Yeah, and those small caps, as you said up front, then ultimately one day become those big caps. We'll leave that there. Smallcaps.co.za for the full article. It's Keith McLachlan, Fund Manager, Alpha Asset Management. Appreciate the time.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Claudia Smith. She's a director at Orange Link. Claudia, morning. Appreciate your time. A great article that you were writing on Retailing Africa, talking about, and I hear the phrase, and it's been grinding me. People are saying, you know, new normal. What you're saying is, no, let's not go back to a new normal. Let's completely readjust our thinking. Almost in a sense, let's make this, I suppose, for a phrase, let's turn the future post-pandemic into a new reality rather than back to a normal.
That's exactly it. Good morning, Simon. Thanks for having me. You know, there's nothing normal about what we went through, nothing normal about life and business right now. You know, our country's in massive debt. There's so many businesses have closed their doors. People have lost their livelihoods. Unemployment is high. Business confidence is low. You know, so for me, we shouldn't really be looking for a new normal or that next normal. Firstly, it negates and disregards kind of everything that we've been through. And secondly, it implies the typical run of the mill. And if anything, that's exactly what we can't be at a time like this. If we strive for normal and we don't adjust our thinking, we fall complacent. And that means we don't looking for the new opportunities. And as a country, I think we need to look for those, especially now.
Yeah, and to your point, I mean, we don't want to be normal. We want to be, you know, exemplary. We want to be different. And this is a case of, I mean, we're really talking here, you know, business has been turned upside down. Heck, personal lives have, you know, everything has been turned upside down. And use this almost in a sense, self-disrupt, whether it be self-disrupting your business, whether it be self-disrupting your personal, your individual. It's a case of really let's turn it on its head. Let's look at things from every different direction and not say, you know, let's go back to what it was in February. Let's make a new February.
Exactly. You know, business currently, and even life, I suppose, is an experiment. You know, demand is difficult to forecast. There's polarizing consumer sentiments and comfort levels. You know, regulations also always changing. So, you know, how do we remain relevant? How do we keep up to date? And, you know, things are already disrupted and there's no doubt that we're likely to see more come. Mm-hmm. So just because something works in the past, we need to realize that it doesn't mean it's going to work going forward. And I think more importantly, we need to be okay with that. We need to be open to that change. And I think that's something that we struggle with.
Yeah, I like that. We need to be okay with that. Do you give a great example? We've got a new airline coming into South Africa later this year. We currently have, is it three airlines in business rescue? Comair, SAA, SA Express. Obviously, demand is not there. Yet someone out there is in the middle of a pandemic saying, hey, let's launch an airline. I mean, it might not work, but they're trying. And they, I mean, that is massively disruptive. And from an outsider, it looks crazy. But they've obviously run the numbers and said there's opportunity here to really do things differently.
Absolutely. You know, and it's definitely surprising. I think they saw a gap and they're chasing a growth strategy. And there is growth to be had. You know, if you look for businesses with liquidity, mm-hmm. there's huge opportunities as overhauls happen across bigger chains and sectors. There's also a major opportunity for industry collaboration. And we've seen some great collaboration coming out of COVID. And even for some of those smaller businesses, if you look at the fact that consumer patterns and services have shifted, you know, there's that focus on supporting small businesses and buying local. Consumers are now looking for sustainable options and great service. So, you know, there's definitely room to bring new ways of doing things to the market. And for the smaller guys competing in a bigger market space, which I think brings about that opportunity that we're looking for.
And I mean, the point is, I suppose, we need to, as individuals, drive to this new reality. We can't sit back and say, oh, it's going to be lacquer when it arrives. We need to cast our eye around, see what we can disrupt and strive for it and make it happen. It's not a risk-free situation at all. But if we're not driving it, then it is just going to go back to, you know, people are calling it the new normal. It's just going to go back to the old normal. We don't want that. We need to be proactive.
Exactly. We definitely don't want that. You know, I think it's a time for reflection now. I think we need to really avoid those legacy thinkings and those patterns that we go into. I also don't think we need to be content with the status quo, you know, whether that's in your business, your personal life, or, you know, even as a country. And we also need to look at the positives. You know, some businesses are thriving. There's local support is being amplified. Innovation is happening. And people need to learn from the challenges and pay it forward. You know, there are positives there if you just look. But very importantly, I think we also need to be forgiving of ourselves. You know, it's a new chapter. We're all out of our comfort zones. We just can't be afraid to harness that change.
I like that. We need to be forgiving of ourselves. This is not going to be perfect. It's not going to be exact, but we need to try it. We need to be forgiving. Claudia Smith, director at Orange Inc., really appreciate your time this morning. That's it for today. You'll find us live every weekday morning, 6:30 a.m. on the MoneyWeb website or app, and then podcast from 7 a.m. again, website or app at MoneyWeb or wherever good podcasts are aggregated. Massive thanks to my team, Eddie and Cordora, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contribution. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.